I'm Melissa Idris, and you're watching The Futures Female, the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. Joining me on the show today, I have the co-founders of Pink Collar. We have Zena Law, Elaine Sim, and Sophia Jamal, rounding up the three guests today. Now, Pink Collar is a recruitment agency with ethical sourcing and practices for workers and employers. So we're going to find out a little bit more about what they do. Welcome to the show, ladies. Good to have you here.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So was that correct? Was I correct in my introduction of Pink Collar? Is that the right way to introduce this platform, Zena?
Yes, yes.
So all right, so tell us a little bit more about Pink Collar.
So Pink Collar is a professional recruitment agency to help employers in Malaysia hire Filipino domestic workers ethically. So our service focuses a lot on providing a professional and efficient service to employers while also eliminating debt bondage and human trafficking from the entire pipeline of our service.
All right. So because when you say ethical recruitment agency, I think the first thing that comes to mind is which part of it is ethical, right? Have you had to answer that question to people?
Okay. So the cusp of it is really our no placement fee and no salary deduction policy for our domestic workers.
Okay.
What's very common in this industry is that workers are usually charged very high fees or are forced to have their salaries deducted in order to repay the recruiters or the agencies for the, finding these jobs in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we eliminate that and promise that all our workers would be entitled to a no placement fee policy ensures that all of them who come in under us can migrate into Malaysia safely and debt free.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's the ethical part
yes.
of it. Okay. So there are three of you and you joined Pink Collar and kind of at different stages or phases of its inception.
Mm-hmm.
Zena, you kind of conceived the idea initially and took that first step, and Elaine joined because of your background in Hong Kong. Talk to me about how you three came together and how Pink Collar came together.
Right.
Zena started first, right?
Yeah.
So how did you get it started?
Yeah, so I mean, the girls always say I basically just conceived like a movement. It
okay.
wasn't any like proper solution, but I just knew that all I wanted to do was to shed more light on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved home to Malaysia in the end of 2017 after graduating
mm-hmm.
from abroad. And I just felt like, you know, Malaysia was ready for, you know, to look into better treatment or better working conditions for migrant workers in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, honestly, Pink Collar was just an idea. And, you know, we were on a mission to find a solution that could end, you know, debt bondage and human trafficking for migrant workers. But starting out, you know, we thought that tech could be the solution.
Okay.
We first ideated as a shared economy platform to directly connect workers and employers. So that they could have better access to each other, it would be transparent, and you would eliminate the need for unethical middlemen
right.
or brokers.
Okay.
But later on, you know, we found that to be to actually impose quite a high risk to the workers because it direct hiring is not compliant to the laws and regulations of the countries who send these workers to us. So around that time, I started to look into possibly becoming an employment agency myself. I was introduced to Elaine from our mentor. From Hong Kong. Elaine used to work in a place called Fair Employment Foundation, and they were one of the first people to conceive the notion of an ethical employment agency to counter
right.
this issue.
Which is wonderful because
yeah.
Hong Kong, I mean, you know, it's got such a huge migrant worker population,
yeah. Yeah.
especially domestic workers. So you were working in that field in Hong Kong and then decided to come and work together with Zena. Is that how it started?
Yeah, so I was interning with this amazing foundation back in 2016 for a month right out of law school. And then I went on to qualify as a lawyer, and then I guess timing was just great when I met Zena.
Okay.
She's gotten the ball rolling, and I thought it was just a great time to join her.
Mm.
And I always saw the value of starting something like this in Malaysia, so it was just perfect timing for myself as well as you know, at the point when I met Zena.
All right, and Sophia, how did you end up joining the team?
Yep, so my background is actually in public policy studies and social entrepreneurship. So I graduated from the US and came back to Malaysia in 2017. And I actually started working for a financial institution.
Mm.
At the time, I wanted to do something outside of work hours. So I started, well, how we actually started was quite random, but I wanted to host like a raya gathering for the domestic workers in my neighborhood. Okay. And I actually faced a lot of resistance in the process of hosting this very small candid gathering. And I was just telling my friend how disappointed I was about the reality. And she said, oh, I actually have a friend called Elaine who, you know, is going to be jumping careers and joining this ethical recruitment movement. And so I said, oh, great, can I speak to Elaine? And she connected me to Elaine. Mm-hmm. And I started working, doing volunteer work for Pink Collar part-time for about 8 months.
Okay.
And I just felt this growing sense that I needed to leave my previous job and join them.
It felt like a calling, like this is what it's supposed to be. You mentioned resistance to a gathering of migrant workers. What kind of resistance?
So just a lot of the employers in my neighborhood were not comfortable with their domestic workers, you know, gathering and meeting each other for reasons of being, you know, maybe afraid that they might learn of the different salaries or, you know, the different kind of provisions allowed or not allowed in different homes. And if I may add, I do think that a lot of employers, as you mentioned, are just not aware of how workers are brought into the country. Mm. Sometimes, you know, they also hear stories or they're told certain things on like what to provide to their workers or not to provide. And a lot of times when employers understand why we should be affording certain, you know, rights or provisions, they're very, very open to it.
Well, let's come back and continue that conversation, especially about the recruitment process for domestic workers here in Malaysia. We're going to continue this conversation shortly after this quick break on The Future's Female. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Future's Female. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm chatting to the good folks of Pink Collar, which is helping domestic workers in Malaysia gain access to better and safer job opportunities here. All right, so before the break, Sophia, you touched on a very important thing. Sometimes you said that, you know, employers don't understand fully what the rights are of migrant workers, may not fully understand or be aware that they are limiting their foreign workers or infringing on their rights. So talk to me about the recruitment process here in Malaysia for domestic workers and where the problems lie. I mean, which was the biggest issue that you felt you guys had to tackle when you started Pink Collar? Who wants to take it? Elaine, would you like to start?
So one of the first things that we wanted to tackle was the high termination rates in this industry. So on average, after doing our market survey, we sort of ballparked the number at 30-40% of contracts not being completed. And that's a really high number, and it causes a lot of disruption for workers as well as employers in their homes. And the way we tried to address it was looking at where the pain points were.
Right.
So one thing we realized was job matching wasn't done very well, and there was a lot of room for improvements there. And when we looked deeper into the industry, we realized that a lot of the information about the jobs aren't being provided accurately to workers and vice versa. You know, there's a lot of distance in terms of, you know, information between workers and employers before the worker is placed into the employer's home. Mm-hmm. And we address that by introducing a lot of transparency into our contracting process. So every job offer is customized with Pink Collar. We also do the matching, taking into account the management styles of employers and, you know, how workers like to receive instructions. We also look at personality matching.
So that is amazing. So you go down to even making sure that, you know, the intangibles are also taken into consideration.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. That's interesting. Yeah. So job matching was one of the pain points that you looked at. Okay.
At the end of the day, what we realized was most important was to align expectations, because we realized that there was a lot of termination rates, you know. What explains it most is the misalignment in terms of what workers expected from the jobs and what employers expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked, we took that very seriously and took that on as a challenge to make sure that we're doing quality placements and not just, you know, quantity.
Okay, all right. Zena, do you want to add to that? Were there other pain points about the recruitment process in Malaysia that you felt Pink Collar could address?
Right. So going back to the debt bondage situation, I think you asked why is it so important that we implement a no placement fee policy?
Yes, no placement fee and also no salary deduction. Yes. Right? Why is that important?
Because when you take into account the demographic of, you know, workers that we're trying to place to Malaysia, they're usually from low income households. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually, you know, living, you know, in on, you know, below the poverty line. They're usually the sole breadwinners of their homes. And so, you know, taking on like substantial loans or, you know, having to pay, you know, much more than what they could afford in order to secure a job that is supposedly better paying, that is supposedly meant to give them even more financial opportunity abroad, is something that becomes very burdensome for them.
Right.
These no placement fees means that our workers can, you know, find jobs in Malaysia, but also not assume the financial responsibility that would make them unable to leave unsuitable or unsafe workplaces.
Okay, all right. So they still have kind of financial freedom to be able to leave a job that they may not want to keep.
So we hear stories from, you know, our training center partner in the Philippines, who are an ethical training center, and they tell me that they ran, they tell us that they ran training sessions with these workers and asked them, you know, if your employer was mistreating you or you were facing abuse in your workplace, would you leave? And, you know, a majority of them said no. But then they kind of like restructured the question and asked them, but what if you knew that you didn't have to pay, you know, an additional fee in order to find and secure a better job that was, you know, that's not privy to this abuse? And all of them said yes, then I would leave. Because the notion of recruitment debt is so ingrained into them that they just, you know, immediately assume that if they were to be placed abroad and if they were unlucky enough to work in a home that would, you know, perpetrate these abuses towards them, that they would just have to tolerate it.
Right.
Or, at the last resort, run away from that job.
Okay.
So we found that link between, you know, like the high termination rates in Malaysia and, you know, the fear of employers that their workers would run away back to, you know, the high, you know, recruitment debt that is taken on by these workers.
It's this vicious cycle, isn't it? And this comes back to what you were saying, Sophia, about the resistance that you face putting together. Employers just are terrified that if domestic workers have interaction with the outside world, that they will then opt to run or find the first reason is to run. And I have to say, escape is often, you know, the last resort when it comes to debt bondage, especially if you are put in these circumstances. What has your experience been working with Pink Collar and trying to, I guess, look at some of the challenges in the recruitment process, knowing that these are real people facing these issues? I mean, they're just not numbers, right? They're people who have to face this. What has your experience been?
Yep. So actually following on what Zena was saying before is that training is actually really important.
Training.
And what we realize is that oftentimes the industry overlooks how important it is. Because if you think about a domestic worker coming to Malaysia, they're not just here to work, but they're also going to live here in a stranger's home, essentially. And what we do is we don't just train workers to be domestic workers. So our training center does not only teach hard skills, like how do you fold clothes or iron well, but it also focuses a lot on soft skills because we do believe that we need to bring workers in to also be successful migrants. Anyone who's been abroad, studied abroad, understands that there are so many challenges of moving to a new place. So we train our workers on professionalism to remind them that there's value in their work so that they also feel that there's, you know, their work has worth. And that we've seen gives them that sense of accountability. As well, we train them on financial management. So if you're here because you have goals and you have financial goals, how do you meet them?
That's really great, but is it sustainable on a large scale? Can you scale this training? Because if you were to train every domestic worker in this in these skills, is that feasible?
So that's an interesting thing, right? Like, this is actually a mandatory requirement by the Philippine government in order for them to come to Malaysia.
That was what you said. It needs to comply with the laws of the country. Okay.
So recruitment agency does not offer it, you know, singularly. You know, we have like a whole supply chain of ethical partners who have to work with us in order to bring a worker in legally.
Okay.
So the training component is actually mandatory, and we decided to take that to our advantage by working with, you know, an incredible partner who has co-developed this curriculum for workers who are specifically coming to Malaysia for work.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So training is definitely important.
Yeah.
It's not just domestic workers that, you know, that the training that needs training. I think employers need training too, especially in the rights of domestic workers. Mm. Have you had to educate your potential employers about what the rights are of workers, Sophia?
So actually, interestingly, a lot of employers are very open. They ask us on the first call, actually, what are the rights of domestic workers? Can you explain the contract to me? Okay. And when we explain the contract to them and tell them, of course, that we supplement our workers with good training, and this is why we think that workers should be, you know, afforded things like their handphones, for example, we train our workers on professionalism so they know how to use their phones responsibly. And when, you know, their fears of workers going out and, you know, they say meeting the wrong crowd, actually Pink Collar has an initiative called Pink Collar Community. We don't have a touch and go engagement stance with our workers. We actually keep in contact with our workers even post placement. And as you mentioned before, we do have sort of like refresher courses for our workers based on their training material that they've already, you know, undergone in Manila.
So do you have to answer basic questions like, can they keep their own passport, or should they have phones? Should they be required, given a day off? Because more often than not, domestic workers live full time in the house. So have you had to answer basic questions like that? Could you reiterate some of the basic ones?
Yeah, so we address all these points in the first call with all of our employers, because it's not just that it's complying with the laws, it also contributes towards more healthy employment relationships as well. Sometimes withholding handphones and withholding passports, you know, unknowingly creates a lot of resentment from workers towards their employers. And sometimes whether workers think of it as of their jobs as good jobs really comes down to just these points. They are crucially important to them, but are sometimes taken for granted on the employer's side. But we want to work with our employers on getting past this fear of, you know, workers running away, and focus on creating good jobs instead. And good jobs really roots from good management styles.
Where does this fear come from? Sorry to interrupt, but where does this fear come from? Having their domestic workers run away?
I think there's just not enough resources out there on how to manage domestic workers well. And that's why, most of the time, like, employers who want, you know, who have the good intention of doing this better don't have the right resources available to them.
Right.
And I think as an agency, we are a good port of call for employers, and we do provide, you know, these management resources within our capacity at the moment. Of course, we're looking at more efforts on how to disseminate this better. But at the moment, our employers come back to us when they have issues with their workers. We work through those problems with them, and most of the time the problems that we've been facing so far with the workers that we've placed wouldn't be about workers' attitudes or, you know, employers not providing rights, but most of the questions or challenges that we're working through now are management problems, which can always be resolved, and we work with our employers on resolving those things. And that's, you know, tweaking a bit on like how workers are managed in a household really goes a long way to contribute towards a successful place.
This is what you were talking about in terms of aligning expectations,
exactly.
Right? If you just manage expectations from the very beginning, then perhaps find ways to align them all. All right, we're going to learn a little bit more about Pink Collar after these messages. Stay with us on The Futures Female. Welcome back to The Futures Female. I'm Melissa Idris. With me, Zena Law, Elaine Sim, and Sophia Jamal from Pink Collar. So earlier, you guys talked about using technology, leveraging technology, and using social media for recruitment. And you talked about job matching. So that's the key thing, right? So talk to me about how technology helps you do this in a transparent and ethical way.
Right.
Zena?
So how technology benefits our process right now at this point, it's from mainly two ways. The first way is how we've innovated the sourcing process of these domestic workers. how the industry currently does like the sourcing of workers would be through their connections on the ground in the source countries. How we've innovated is that we've utilized social media to reach these workers directly, which kind of also helps us, you know, provide more information transparency to them, since we are the ones who are directly managing them. We are the ones who are directly building relationships with them, and also screening them at the first point of contact.
Okay, so they go to your Facebook page,
yes,
or
so
Instagram,
exactly,
and then say, hey, I am looking for, I'm interested, yeah, in job, yeah, opportunities,
exactly,
in Asia.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's as
a very
direct as that.
Yeah, it's, yes, a very democratized process. Actually, it's very new for all these workers as well, even those who have gone abroad before, to be in direct contact with the country on the receiving end.
Yes,
you know,
I would say that would be,
yeah,
one of the new kind of disruptive,
right,
ways,
right,
of recruitment.
Right.
Yeah.
And what that's allowed us to do is really not just drive down costs of acquiring workers, but it's also helped us, you know, manage what the experience of these workers are, you know, with us from the very beginning.
What do you mean by that, manage the experience?
So, you know, we provide more accountability in that, you know, we're delivering the same message to them from the beginning to the end.
Okay.
You know, they know what the pink collar experience is. You know, we tell them from the very beginning that, you know, this is an agency that's going to, you know, to the best of our ability, find you employers who would respect your rights. You know, we are strictly no placement fee, strictly no salary deduction. We would be here as your point of contact in case you have any sort of complications or you may have any issues that arise, even while you're still in the Philippines. Yeah.
Did you have to build trust with the,
yes,
migrant worker,
yes,
community?
Yes, definitely.
Because anything on social media, you have to take,
yep,
with a pinch,
yep,
of salt.
And,
right?
And that's one of our main challenges, right, in the beginning, when a lot of our workers were like, are you a scam? You know, they were,
okay,
like, we were,
right,
warned about agencies like you,
yeah,
you know? But after, like, you know, our first few workers and the workers, you know, who have vouched for us and vouched for our, like, credibility and vouched for, you know, the fact that we are authentic and legit.
That, like, cousins applying and, like, friends
sisters
applying.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's actually spread word of,
yeah,
mouth as well.
Yeah.
This is just based on testimonial.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
you can trust them. This,
yeah,
is a legit operation.
Exactly.
What,
so,
about on the demand side? So that was,
right,
the supply side. On the demand side, how did you build that kind of traction?
Rapport.
Yeah.
Very similarly as well, you know, one thing about, you know, our service is that it's convenient. Employers don't have to actually physically go into an agency office.
Right.
And our service is very personalized to them. You know, we're not just sending them like 10 to 15 like profiles. We're actually like taking the time to understand their needs and then specially select workers that we believe would be successful in your homes.
Okay.
So they get this, you know, a very like personalized and customized, you know, service experience, and they can do this all digitally in the very beginning.
Okay.
And you know, it's the same for employers as well. You know, we really depended on the word of mouth in order for, you know, to attract more employers to use our service.
Mm.
And I would say we've kind of gotten past the worst of it.
All right.
And
okay,
I know
we're
really enjoying, you know, like reputational.
Yeah, and it's about keeping that momentum,
yeah,
going. But you know, you are a very young organization,
yeah,
and I'm sure the challenges have come,
yes,
at you hard and,
yes,
fast.
Yeah.
What are some of the things, the real challenges that you've had to face head on, especially in this really tough industry? Recruitment is not easy, and it's often a male-dominated one.
Mm.
You know, what are some of the challenges that you've had to really try and push through?
I think being female was actually something that worked to our advantage, because the demographic, or the clientele that we deal with on the demand side, as well as the workers that we work with, are predominantly female.
Mm.
So we have
That's true.
Understanding, and it's helped us communicate better as well on both ends. And that trust was, I think, it was built up more quickly for,
yeah,
us because we were women.
Okay.
So I think to that end, you know, this is a male-dominated industry, but being female entering this market, mm, even though we were young, did work to our advantage.
It's funny though that it is a somewhat male-dominated industry, because most of the migrant domestic workers are female,
yeah,
and the people making the decisions about domestic workers
mostly
are
female.
Also the,
yeah,
females in the household.
Yeah.
So it's the clientele seems to be,
yeah,
female, but it's, you know, driven by males. What about you, Sophia? Were there lessons that you learned the hard way in trying to build up this business and learning about the realities of recruitment?
Because we recruit through social media, we actually don't, you know, take passports off our workers. We don't charge placement fees. So in this sense, the time to for a worker to come to Malaysia takes about 10 to 14 weeks because of the processing on the ground in the Philippines, as well as the visa application site in Malaysia. Right. And none of our workers are bonded to us in this time at all, so they can technically drop out of the process at any time. Okay. So that is also a way for us to kind of test their commitment, because okay. they could literally just say...
Walk away,
yeah. but... So I mean that's an interesting thing, but the challenge is that we are recruiting workers from many places in the Philippines, and what I've worked on a case where a worker had a lot of trouble just getting to the training center because she didn't have enough money to take a taxi to the training center. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, and I think Zana and Elaine would also share, that we have had some emotional growth in this process, because we do deal with a demographic that encounters a lot of challenges that we would never face, right? Yeah. And that requires a lot of, I guess, just we check in with each other a lot, and we need to understand, the realities on the ground that they are facing, so that we can accommodate the process for them as much as we can.
All right, yeah. So what's in store for Pink Collar in 2020? What do you guys have planned for this year, Zana?
So we definitely want to set the groundwork for an expansion to the Indonesian market.
Okay, so right now it's just the Philippines, right?
Yes.
So you're looking at perhaps recruiting in Indonesia?
Yes.
Okay.
And the framework for an ethical recruitment process is really ethical partners. And right now we are looking, we want to look into ethical partners in Indonesia as well, because more than 80% of the foreign domestic workers in Malaysia are Indonesian.
Right, definitely.
Yep.
It is the overwhelming percentage.
Yeah.
So that naturally seems to be where you would turn your next market
yeah.
to. And more challenges, you reckon, in Indonesia?
Definitely,
okay.
definitely. But I believe that with the right team,
that... And the right partners.
With the right partners,
that's
yeah.
right, to make sure you've got on both sides, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
And on that note, we're definitely going to expand our team this year.
Oh, wonderful.
Hopefully
okay.
achieve more of a gender balance, although I'm completely fine with this imbalance.
Well, diversity is always
yes,
encouraged.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show and telling us a lot more about ethical recruitment and the issues faced by domestic workers here in Malaysia. Thank you for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure talking to
Thank
you guys.
You.
I'm Melissa Idris. That's all for this episode of The Futures Female. I will be back with you same time next week for another episode, speaking to other extraordinary women right here on the show. Thank you for watching, and good night.